I'm Laura McNamara speaking with Marcos Yank with Unica. He is the president, and we were just at an ethanol summit, and you guys kind of gave us an overview of the success of sugarcane ethanol in Brazil. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about, first of all, let's point out some things you said, that 45% of the fuel being used right now is from sugarcane. There's a lot of FFBs out there on the road. It seems like as a country, consumers have embraced the fuel. Right now, the U.S. is growing almost faster than Brazil, but you guys seem to have consumers in on the deal. How would you say that you've got it down to the people?
I believe that the U.S. program now is bigger than our program. It's growing very fast, as you said. But we have a much more competitive situation in Brazil. We have 30 years of experience. We have 100% of the gas stations in Brazil have dedicated pumps to ethanol. We have a flex fuel fleet. It's like the U.S. fleet of flex fuel cars, but they can pump their cars with ethanol. What doesn't happen here? Here, most of the flex fuel cars cannot pump ethanol because there's no distribution. And these decisions were made by our governments in the previous oil crisis of the 70s. So we started our program there. We had subsidies in the beginning, then we eliminated those subsidies. When we started, ethanol prices were 3 times more expensive than oil prices. Today, they cost 40%. And we have the flex fuel fleet. 90% of the new cars are now flex fuel there. So I think we have consolidated a very interesting experience that can be replicated in many countries in the world. And we needed to collaborate with the U.S. to make ethanol a reality.
And just to clarify, you mentioned the government did subsidize the sugarcane, but it's no longer anymore and prices are still lower. Is that what you're saying?
There's no more subsidies to ethanol production in Brazil. There are still some tax exemptions, as you have here. But it's really something that is extremely competitive in our country. In the 90s, we had the elimination of the government subsidies. And then ethanol became extremely competitive to a barrel that now is more than $130. We believe that ethanol costs today are around $50 to $60 a barrel equivalent. So it's really something that's happening very fast. And it's very democratic. One point that's very important to say is that today the world is extremely dependent on oil. Oil is scarce, is expensive, and very pollutant. Biofuels are just 1% of the fossil fuel world. And they could be much more democratic. 100 countries in the world could supply biofuels, competitive biofuels, to the other 200 countries that exist in the world. And they reduce greenhouse gas emissions in 90%. And they are renewable. And they are cheaper, at least in Brazil. And it could be in Africa, in South America, in the future here in the U.S. because of the second generation. So I believe that we need to give a chance for biofuels.
Okay, and you're referring to the overall worldwide potential of this fuel. Right now, the big battle in the U.S. is, again, the consumer. I wanted to ask you, did you guys face any negative press, any attacks when you were first growing your industry? Because right now, ethanol demand is almost that of gasoline or even has surpassed it in your country. So how did you get it down to the consumer level, educate them, help them embrace the fuel?
You see, people in Brazil, they know. First, they know ethanol very well because we have ethanol pumps in all gas stations since the 70s. So it's something that the consumer can identify, they can choose, and we can make campaign about that, campaigns, public publicity campaigns. In the U.S., there's no ethanol on the pumps. You just have some blends coming down in the road, but no real distribution of ethanol. So this is the big difference. In my opinion, the issues are, in the U.S., the big issue is the food versus fuel debate because you are using more corn to produce ethanol and corn prices are very high. We don't have this debate in our country because in Brazil, the production of food grew faster than the production of biofuels. So there's no discussion about that. Biofuels have been growing at the same time that food has been growing very much. We have some debates in our case about the Amazon, the sensitivity of the Amazon. And we've been proving that we are not producing biofuels in the Amazon. We're producing biofuels in the very traditional agricultural areas of the country. I think that this negative views comes from emotional arguments, especially in Europe today, against biofuels. coming from the car industry, parts of the car industry, the oil industry, the food industry, you see. And what we need to do now is to really have strong debates like this one we had today, to clarify and to use the best available scientific data and information about that. You see, people really are not familiar with biofuels in the world today. The regular citizen, he doesn't know that you have sugarcane, you have corn, you have new technologies coming very, very strongly. So we need to clarify that. And I think that the car companies have a role on that, especially GM now, for example, that's really pushing hard in this area to make events like this one everywhere and to clarify. The usage of ethanol here in India, it's really fabulous. It's the only big race in the world that's moved 100% in ethanol. And this is a good example that could be replicated in Formula One and in many other races around the world.
And when you mentioned the food versus fuel debate here in the U.S., you mentioned, you called it the six Fs earlier when you were speaking. I thought that was kind of interesting. Do you want to elaborate on that again real quick?
Yeah, what we said in Brazil is that it's not food versus fuel. It's food plus fuel, plus feed, plus fibers, plus fruits, and plus forests. So the six Fs, you see, food, feed, fiber, fuel, fruits, and forests. We can do all that together. We did that in our country. And the solution, the key solution for that is technology, is to increase the yields. It's coming from the current 3,000 liters per hectare that you have on corn ethanol to the 7,000 liters per hectare that we have on sugarcane ethanol, and to 14,000 liters per hectare in the future with the second generation. So this is the way to avoid the negative impacts on the food production. It's really using the best technology. And the U.S. is investing on that. There are at least 20 companies in the U.S. investing very hard on second generation. We are investing on new varieties of sugarcane. We are investing on the usage of biomass. So this is the solution. It's really ask the population to give us space, to give at least the opportunity for biofuels to be part of the solution to a world that is extremely dependent on oil, coming from very conflicting countries and extremely pollutant in terms of greenhouse gas emissions.
You said earlier that you guys could potentially improve current production by 2 to 3 times with the sugarcane, is that correct?
Yes. Today the Brazilian usage of corn is, in terms of land, is almost 3 times bigger than the usage of land for ethanol. We've been using corn just for food production. We don't use it for fuel, but we can do both at the same time in a very competitive way. In the U.S., there is a strong dependence on corn today, but the investments in the U.S. are now in the direction of biomass ethanol, cellulosic ethanol, and it will happen in the next 10 years, especially if oil price continues to be so expensive. And nobody believes that oil prices will go down. You see, because the oil consumption in the world is growing much faster than the oil production, so prices will go up. And then we are now in the beginning of a new era where a breakthrough will happen, and biofuels is part of that.
You talked about increasing the land, but is something like genetically modified crops, is that embraced in Brazil, or is that being considered?
This much less than here. Here you have, for example, a very important experience of using GMOs in corn production. We are still in the process of doing research to use GMOs on sugarcane. But it will happen in the next 10 to 15 years, for sure.
Which could potentially increase yields without necessarily increasing the amount of space,
for example,
land.
What the scientists in Brazil say is that the current level of increase in productivity is 2% a year. With GMOs, it could be 4% a year. So it could be the double. than we have today with traditional genetic improvement. So it's just a question of doing all research about biosecurity of GMOs and then use that in the market. And it will happen in the next 15 years.
And finally, you seem to stress the cooperation between Brazil and the U.S., saying that right now the two countries make up 75% of world production of ethanol. What kind of cooperation do you see? How do you think that could work?
I think that it starts with the two presidential visits we had. President Bush came to Brazil last year to sign an agreement with our president. And then our president came to D.C., so two presidential visits is quite important. And then the memorandum of understanding have three areas today. Research, doing research together, putting U.S. and Brazilian scientists together. We are now receiving a delegation of 10 U.S. Scientists there to start to make a cooperation. Cooperation in third markets to have other suppliers, especially in Central America and in the Andean community. It's a huge opportunity to produce ethanol in Colombia, in Peru, in Central America. And cooperation in standards, because ethanol is not a standardized product in the world yet, like gasoline, for example. So this is where we started last year, and we believe that in the future this cooperation needs to go to investments and trade. So also give some opportunity for Brazil to export ethanol to the U.S., which is now extremely difficult because of the U.S. tariff. It's extremely high against Brazilian export. So we think that this discussion needs to come in the U.S. It's not a question of replacing the U.S. corn ethanol to Brazilian with Brazilian sugarcane ethanol, but giving some space for the Brazilian ethanol in the U.S. energy matrix.
Can you mix, like, let's say you guys produce sugarcane ethanol, we produce corn-based ethanol, could you mix that?
Yes.
As one fuel?
Completely, completely. They are exactly the same at the gas station level, so it's exactly the same product. The difference is the productivity in the farm. So there's a difference in terms of productivity levels, in terms of greenhouse gas emissions, in terms of energy balance, very favorable to sugarcane today. But in the future, the U.S. is investing so much money on second generation, on biomass, that we believe that our ethanol, our products will be quite similar.
You mentioned the worldwide capabilities of ethanol with 100 countries potentially being able to produce their own. Do you think it could ultimately become a competitor with oil, big-time competitor worldwide?
No, I don't believe. I think that the world is extremely dependent on oil, and oil has no commercial alternative right now. It will have in the next 50 years, I believe. But right now, biofuels are 1% of the fossil fuel world. I think that it can go to 5 or 10%, which is already a lot. And that's where I believe that we should work. It's not the replacement, but having biofuels as an alternative to the scarcity of oil and to the very pollutant levels of using diesel and gasoline. And one thing that's important, especially in the U.S., is that you've been importing more than 60% of your needs from very complicated countries, especially in the Middle East. And if you open the door for imports of biofuels, you could have allies in your side, in South America, in Africa, countries that are not problematic as dictatorships in the Middle East. You could have 100 countries participating in this market. It would be much more democratic and much less problematic in terms of the consequences of concentration of oil in just a few countries.
Okay, thank you, Marcus. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.